11th, 2020. This is Deanna Spingola, and I'm broadcasting from the Chicago suburbs. Thanks for joining me today at republicbroadcasting.org. I invite you to visit and subscribe to Spingola. Well, you can't subscribe at Spingola.com, but you can visit. Anyway, visit Spingola.com. You may subscribe at SpingolaSpeaks.net, ScreeningSandyHook.net, and during the program, email questions or comments to comment@Spingola.email. I invite you to visit our chat room at Spingola.chatango.com. I also invite you to join me on Twitter, and that's Deanna Spingola at Deanna Spingola. We will take calls later on in the program at 800-313-9443. My guest today is Vincent Bruno. His website is stopnoahidelaw.blogspot.com, and I will post that in the chat room right now. Vincent, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for having me.
This is going to be a very interesting discussion today, and some people would say, oh, that's kind of controversial, and how can you talk about things like that? But you are a researcher. You're not just somebody that that's making some statements without some very, very detailed background, research that is impeccable. Your research is fabulous. So
thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
This is really amazing. When did you start your research, first of all?
I've been doing this for 7 years. What happened was I got into it because, you know, you always hear things about Jews and different questions about them. And, you know, there's a lot of so-called conspiracy theories that go around. And, you know, people talk a lot about Jews wanting to take over the world and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, I'm just not the type of person. I'm not the type of person to kind of condemn a religion because maybe a lot of people that are in it are involved in something bad, because there's a difference between people who are behaving badly and then an actual ideology that is bad. And I would notice that I was raised a very religious Christian, and I had to read the Old Testament a lot. And when you read the Old Testament of Judaism, it's very conservative. It's a very conservative religion. And I would notice that a lot of what people would talk about that Jews were involved in, a lot of it didn't seem very conservative. And a lot of it didn't necessarily seem like it came directly out of the Bible. And what happens is people tend to talk about Jews having there's a disproportionate amount of Jews in power in politics and in banking and these different kinds of things. And not that I didn't understand that idea, but I was really looking for something that was in the doctrine of Judaism that would tell Jews to behave this way. Because is it just individual Jews that are not behaving well, or are they getting into such high positions because they're so smart and industrious, as people like to say? Or is there really something, a spiritual and actually legal kind of reason why they're involved in all this? So what I noticed is I did try debating with Jews, and I would use the Old Testament of the Bible, and nothing ever seemed to stick, because they would always say, well, if you look at Jews, we don't really live like that anymore. The Old Testament really has nothing to do with modern-day Judaism, modern-day Jewish life. If Israel was a Torah theocracy, it would be like Islam, and it's not like that. And they were very dismissive, and I wasn't really able to kind of get anywhere with that. And but I started doing more research, and it was weird because I was about to give up, and I said, you know what, maybe there's really nothing wrong going on here. Maybe all this is just, you know, hot air, and maybe people are just jealous, and maybe anti-Semitism is about jealousy and all this kind of stuff. And But I came across a website. It's called come-end-here.com. Come-end-here.com. It's the webmistress is a woman named Carol A. Valentine. I don't know if that's her real name.
All right. But yes, I'm familiar with her.
Mm-hmm. You're familiar with Carol? Yeah.
Yes.
So I came across her website, and she was the one that actually introduced me to the Talmud and how the Talmud, the Babylonian Talmud, has actually become the centerpiece of the Jewish religion. That I had always thought about the Torah because I was raised Christian, so we were always told, well, the Torah was the Jewish book, and then the New Testament came from Christianity, and most Christians really don't know much about the Talmud, and they actually don't know much about Judaism. So I read about how the Talmud actually replaces and in many ways negates the Torah or the Old Testament. So I learned about the Talmud, and I noticed that when I started talking about the Talmud with Jews, they became a lot more leery, and it had a lot more impact than when I would talk about the Torah. But what was most important was on her website, she had an article. It's something like America's New Government Church or something like that. If you search Noahide Law on her or Noahide on her website, you'll find it.
And what was that? Sorry. What was that website again? Could you repeat that website?
Come-end-here.com, like come and listen. It's a repeated phrase in the Talmud. She named it after the Talmud keeps saying, come and hear. The rabbis are telling people to come and hear. So I found this article on her website, called America's New Government Church, and I learned about something called the Noahide Laws, and I'm not going to describe them fully yet. I'm going to get into that. But basically, the Noahide Laws are Jewish law that applies to non-Jews. So it's like, okay, under Islam, you have the Sharia, and the Sharia is for everyone. Everyone is supposed to be under the Sharia. With Judaism, it's different in that there are two sets of laws. There's a set of laws for Jews, and there's a set of laws for non-Jews. And they're different from one another. But the thing is that these Jewish laws, these Noahide laws for non-Jews, Jews say are mandatory for us, and they seek to regulate our life religiously and spiritually, our freedom of speech. So basically what the Noahide laws do, there's seven of them, and they abolish the following. They abolish idolatry, but this is the Jewish definition of idolatry. It happens a lot. Christians hear that the Noahide laws abolish idolatry, and they say, well, that doesn't apply to me, and so I really don't need to worry about this. The thing is, this is the Talmudic definition of idolatry. And according to the Talmud and according to Jewish law, Christianity is idolatry because of the Trinity. So they say that if you worship Jesus as God, you are guilty of idolatry because Jesus, they say, becomes an idol. A man as God, according to them, is an idol. And so you are engaged in idolatry. And the Talmud makes several negative references to Christians and Jesus. It says Christians are in hell and that Jesus was a sorcerer and that he blasphemed on the cross and all these different kinds of things. So this prohibition against idolatry very much applies to Christians. Then comes the prohibition against blasphemy. And again, the Christians first hear that and they say, well, that has nothing to do with me. But it's blasphemy against the Jewish God of the Talmud, not the Christian God. And you are allowed to blaspheme Christianity, of course. You're allowed to blaspheme Jesus, but it's only the Jewish God and the Jewish religion and the Jewish people that you are not allowed to blaspheme. So the
the Talmud, as I understand it, the Torah is the first five books of the Old Testament. But the Talmud is what? It consists of about 60 books or volumes. It's an ongoing kind of a publication. Is that true?
No, the Talmud, so what happened was the Jews, when you say Torah, it's a little bit confusing because Jews will use the word Torah for both Talmud and Torah. It gets confusing. They do differentiate it sometimes where they call it written Torah, where they mean the first four books, first five books, and then they'll call oral Torah sometimes Talmud. The reason they call it oral Torah is what happened was the actual written Torah, the Old Testament of the Bible, was not written until after the Babylonian captivity. So the Jews lived in Israel, and then the Babylonians came in and took them captive, brought them to Babylon.
And then was 587 BC?
Something like that, close to that. And they were brought in, and I think they were in Babylon for 70 years or something like that. And then Persia came in and liberated them, and they went back to Israel, and that's around the time that the Torah was written. Now, what happened was, if you recall, Jesus spoke to the Pharisees in the Bible about the traditions of the elders, and he was talking about how the traditions of the elders had kind of come in and replaced the written law. So there was what had been written down by the sages or by the prophets, but then the Jews, what was written down was the Sadducees. Okay, the Sadducees had the temple, they ruled the temple, and they were basically the main priesthood. But after Babylon, you got what were called the Pharisees. Now, the Pharisees were more street-level kind of Jewish preachers, and they had brought in their own traditions, their own oral traditions that had supposedly been passed down since the time of Moses. And it differed from what the Torah said, and it was different, and it had different kinds of stipulations and different kinds of ideas, and it didn't quite go with what had been written down, and that's why Jesus criticized these Pharisees for their so-called traditions of the elders. What happened was, after the death of Jesus, I think within 400 years after the death of Jesus, something like that, I'm not 100% sure of the date, they actually wrote down these traditions of the elders into a book called the Talmud. Now, yes, the Talmud is very extensive. It's volumes and volumes and volumes of books, but it is the Pharisees' doctrine. It is the very doctrine that Jesus condemned as the tradition of the elders, the traditions of the Pharisees. So that got written down. So it's no longer oral Torah. Sometimes Jews still call it oral Torah, but now it is actually written down. And it has replaced the Torah, the Old Testament, the five books of the Bible and beyond. It has replaced it in authority, and in many places it actually negates it and changes the law. So that's where the Talmud comes from. So let's get back to what these Noahide laws are. So no idolatry, no blasphemy, and those both affect Christians whether they know it or not. The third is it abolishes, you can't have any sort of illicit sexual relationships. You can't practice adultery, fornication, homosexuality. All that is banned under Noahide law. Now, the fourth law says no murder, but we're going to get into that Jews can murder non-Jews. There's a difference. Remember, Noahide law is for Jews, whereas Jews have a separate law, and that's halakha. It's for them, and they are actually, they get more rights and privileges than non-Jews do. The fifth law is do not steal, but Jews are allowed to steal from non-Jews. The sixth law is do not eat the flesh cut from a living animal. So in ancient times, it was very common to, if we look at what's going on over in China, where they cut animals alive and where they eat animals alive.
Oh, that's so terrible. Oh, poor little animals.
Right.
Ugh.
But this was a common practice back in ancient times to do this. So they banned that. I don't think most people will have an issue with that. But the seventh law is the most important law. It is the only positive commandment. So the others are all negative commandments. Do not. But the seventh law is a positive commandment that you must do, and that is to set up courts of justice to enforce the other six laws. And the penalty for breaking any of these laws is death by decapitation.
Right.
So, you know, well, the thing is that this doesn't maybe in theory start sounding very disturbing to some people, but, you know, most people would think that this is just theoretical, that Jews really aren't involved in anything like this today, and I've never heard of this, so, I mean, really, is there anything to worry about? So when I went to that Coming Here website and I found her article, America's New Government Church, I learned about Public Law 102-14. Now, Public Law 102-14 was signed into law in 1991 by George Herbert Walker Bush, and I actually want to read out this law because it's very important how this law is written, what it says, and what it presents. So right. Let's just go.
Yeah, let's go ahead and do that. And I have that same photo on my website with talking about the No-Hide Law, but it's different. Mine came from Bill Dannemeyer, which is the husband of Dr. Lorraine Day. But anyway, you have the exact law, so go ahead and read that.
All right, so whereas Congress recognizes the historical tradition of ethical values and principles, which are the basis of civilized society and upon which our great American nation, upon which our great nation was founded, whereas these ethical values and principles have been the bedrock of society from the dawn of civilization when they were known as the seven Noahide laws. So I want to go that clause. Congress is recognizing that the foundation of the American civilization, the foundation upon which it was built, are the seven Noahide laws. Now, that's a very important statement that we're saying, because what is the foundation of America? Isn't it the Constitution?
Or yes, supposedly.
Or is it these Noahide laws? Now, you can make the argument that Congress in this statement, they're saying the Noahide laws supersede the Constitution. So the question becomes, are these laws actually actionable in the United States? Do they carry any sort of weight with them? Is it possible to implement these Noahide laws now? It becomes a question that's up for debate, and you're going to notice everything in the Noahide laws that we're going to talk about is up for debate, and it could be made to look and seem and do whatever you want it to in the moment in time. If you want them to be authoritative, they can be authoritative. If you want to make them seem innocuous, they can seem innocuous. And we're going to see how this game is played by a lot of Noahide apologists. So the second clause is, whereas without these ethical values and principles, the edifice of civilization stands in serious peril of returning to chaos. Now, notice they're going to say this again, but without these Noahide laws, we're in peril of returning to chaos. So Congress is saying that is a call to action. If you're saying if you don't do this right now, the nation is going to plummet into chaos, that is a call to action. That is basically an affirmative that you need to get involved in this. So the next clause, whereas society is profoundly concerned with the recent weakening of these principles that has resulted in crisis that beleaguer and threaten the fabric of civilized society. So we are concerned about them. Society is concerned. And without them, we are in crisis, and we are threatened, okay? So again,
Vincent, we do need to take a real quick 3-minute break, so we'll pick this up on the other side. This is very interesting. We'll be right back, okay. 3 minutes.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. and knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
Starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead.
All righty, we are back, and our guest today is Vincent Bruno. That's B-R-U-N-O, and he is a Noahide law researcher. His research is impeccable. Absolutely impeccable. He's not just making a lot of statements based on prejudice or hearsay or what. This is all research. It's impeccable. Okay, Vincent, continue from where you left off.
Yeah, so we're about halfway through this law. So the next clause says, whereas the justified preoccupation with these crises must not let the citizens of this nation lose sight of their responsibility to transmit these historical ethical values from our distinguished past to the generations of the future. So Congress is saying we're preoccupied with the crisis that we're in because we're not applying Noahide law, and that we have a responsibility to educate the population about the Noahide law. This word education is all over the Noahide law, and we're going to see why and why they stress so much on education. The next clause, whereas the Lubavitch movement has fostered and promoted these ethical values and principles throughout the world, Chabad Lubavitch, they are the most radical, fanatical Noahide evangelists in the world, and we're going to get back to them. They're very important. Next clause, whereas Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson, leader of the Lubavitch movement, is universally respected and revered. On his 89th birthday, falls on March 26, 1991. So they're praising this Menachem Mendel Schneerson, who is the leader of the Lubavitch movement. Now, remember his name because he's going to be very important. Whereas in tribute to this great spiritual leader, the rabbi, this in his 90th year, will be seen as one of education and giving. Again, education. The year in which we turn to education and charity to return the world to the moral and ethical values contained in the 7 Noahide laws. And here's this very important, And whereas this will be reflected in an international scroll of honor signed by the President of the United States and other heads of state, now therefore be it. So we are making a promise in this law, okay? We're promising something that we're going to do. The United States Congress is saying we're going to do something, and it's going to be that our president and other heads of state are going to sign an international scroll pledging to use education and charity to return the world to the ethical values and the Noahide laws.
And it's important to recognize this starts out, it says, whereas Congress recognizes. This is, and this public law, 102-14, is from the American Library of Congress website.
Yes, it is. So the reason we started with Public Law 102-14 is because if anyone has ever heard of Noahide Law, they've heard of Public Law 102-14. This is what everyone talks about, Public Law 102-14.
Right.
Now, in my research, what happened was I accidentally, about a year ago, I stumbled upon another law called Public Law 103-14, which also mentions the Noahide laws and said that they are the cornerstone of society. So I began to wonder to myself, I was like, this is like a sleeper law. I was like, you know, people are talking about Public Law 102-14. They want it repealed because it's offensive. I said, but they have this other law that nobody knew about that was on the books. And I just began to wonder if they had more of these laws in other places. And I actually went to govinfo.gov, the federal government's website, and I found that there are no laws, less than 7 laws and 2 proclamations which recognize the Noahide laws. And they say more than what 102-14 said. And we see 102-14 actually came later. There were many laws prior to it. And there's an actual building of this law. Now, I'm not going to read all of these 7 laws. One reason is because the laws repeat themselves over and over. The first half of these laws, the same statements that the United States recognizes the Congress, I mean, the Congress recognizes the Noahide laws and such. Each law says that. So if we had repealed one of them, the ones that we knew about, this would have still been on the books because they had 6, 7 other laws there that would have replaced it. So the first Noahide law came in 1982. So this is almost 10 years before the first law that everyone knows about. And it was signed by President Ronald Reagan. Now, this is the law that sets up the basis for the next laws that are coming. So this is where we get the Noahide laws are the basis of the American nation. Society is concerned with the weakening of the Noahide laws. Weakening of the Noahide laws threatens society, and it is the nation's responsibility to educate the public on these Noahide laws. So every law that comes after Public Law 97-166, which was the first law that signed in, repeats this. So I'm not going to repeat that again because it's in every law. But each law has something unique to it that makes the unique assertion that's very important. So one unique assertion that is never stated again is that the public needs occasional reminder of the duties of the Noahide law. So not only is the government told that it's their responsibility to educate the population, the public needs to be reminded of their duties. Okay, these duties include setting up courts of justice, which would decapitate anyone who does not follow these Noahide laws, including Christians. And then it sets up a national day of reflection to commemorate Rabbi Schneerson's work in promoting the ethics of the Noahide law. So remember, Rabbi Schneerson is the leader of the Lubavitch movement. We're going to talk about Rabbi Schneerson soon, but let's just get through these laws quickly. So the next law was signed in 1987 by President Ronald Reagan. It is Public Law 100-25. So what was added, now these additional comments that I'm making right now appear in all of the laws that come after it. So added into the body of law is, without Noahide law, the nation stands in peril of chaos. And it discusses the Lubavitch movement, the Chabad-Lubavitch movement, which promotes these Noahide laws.
We're going to go to a quick 3-minute break, then we'll be right back and have a good 20 minutes after that. Be right back.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Huh. For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead.
All righty, we are back. Our guest is Vincent Bruno, and go ahead and continue from where you left off.
Yeah, I'm sorry. These laws might be a little bit tedious to listen to, but they're very important, and I will get through them, and then we have a lot of other stuff to get to, because we're gonna come out of the United States. But we were talking about Public Law 100-25, signed in 1987 by Ronald Reagan. It is the second of the seven laws in America which recognize the Noahide laws. So what we learn also is that Congress, on his 85th birthday, recognizes the work of Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson, and they start what they call in this law a year of turn and return. So they start this program, this Noahide program called Turn and Return, in which the USA turns to education to return the world to the ethics of the Noahide laws. And they call this Education Day USA. And this is basically what these laws are going to be called from now on. Education Day USA. Everything
is
education.
Oh, my. Okay.
Give me 1 second. Okay. So this in 1987, remember in 1991 in Public Law 102-14, they talked about this international scroll. In this law, they also promised that the president and other heads of state are going to sign an international scroll pledging to use education and charity to return the world to the ethical Noahide, the ethics of the Noahide laws. But I want it, that in future will, okay, we're going to be doing that. So then in 1988, we get to Public Law 100-279, which was also signed by Ronald Reagan. He did it three times. Again, it repeats all of those statements that are in every law. But here we learn that Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson's 86th birthday will be a continuation. So they continued this turn and return program for the Noahide laws. The turning toward education to return the world to the values of the Noahide law, which is reflected in an international scroll, which has been signed by the president and other heads of state. So in 1987, we made this promise, and in 1988, by 1988, it had been fulfilled. Now, I don't know where this international scroll is. I don't know which heads of state signed it. I don't know how much authority it has. It is a secret document somewhere. I can't find it on the internet. They're very good at closing it, but it has been signed. So we're no longer waiting for an international scroll to be signed. It has been signed. So now this is the next law, which is extremely important. It was signed in 1990 by George W. Bush. So the 1991 law was signed by George W. Bush, and but that was actually the second law. So in 1990, George Bush signed into law Public Law 101-267. And in this law, we continue again with this turn and return program to educate the world about the Noahide laws. But we've been talking about Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson. Here in the law, it says that Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson has ascended to the leadership of the Guidance of World Jewry, and that this has been reflected in an international scroll which is signed by the president and other heads of state. Rabbi that we keep talking about is legally in the law put up into the leadership position of Jewry. And we're going to see why it's so important. They basically made this one rabbi the Pope of Judaism. Now, we already read through Public Law 102-14, but I just want to reiterate that in 102-14, we get this, that we will be signing an international scroll in the future. Now, one has already been signed. I don't know why they need to sign another one. I don't know what changed. I don't know what was added. I don't know, but it must have been different. And since the last one, it only took a year for them to sign it, I'm sure that this has also been this international scroll that they're talking about in 1991 has also been signed. Finally, the last law is 103-14, which is very different from the rest, but it does say that the Noahide laws are the cornerstone upon which the nation was founded. So we can see that these Noahide laws, which should be offensive to anyone, have been very much ingrained into the United States federal government. Now, I'm going to get back to American Rabbi Schneerson in a minute, but America is not, are not the only people who have recognized these Noahide laws. We'll talk about the Israeli government's involvement in this, but the Vatican has officially twice endorsed the Noahide laws, and they have used, now remember, the Noahide laws are mandatory for non-Jews. It's not that you get to choose, not if you want to. They're mandatory. And the Vatican met with the, I don't want to get into that. But they signed a declaration with many Jews. This was the delegation of the Holy See's Commission for Religious Relations with the Jews. Okay? This is an official document. And they used this. They talk about the Noahide laws limiting individual freedom. So it limits individual freedoms and there's a universal moral code which is incumbent on all of humanity, they say. And then they signed another Noahide declaration. Let me just look what the language said there. It was that, again, they said it was incumbent. I'm sorry, that they are universal moral codes which are incumbent. So whenever you hear these Noahide laws, everything is mandatory, obligatory, incumbent. You have to do it. So the Vatican has signed over onto this. More importantly, the United Nations has also signed onto this. They have signed the Declaration of the Seven Laws of Noah. The language that they used, if you give me a second, or let me just see where it was. They used they use something like mandatory, obligated. So it says to insist that all Jews are obligated to teach the seven Noahide laws. They did say it was mandatory inside. I'm looking at the document now, but I don't want to spend too much time reading through it. But if you go to my website and you go to the United Nations section, you will see the entire document, where you can see that the United Nations has signed on to the idea that these Noahide laws are mandatory for the whole world. So we have the U.S., the Vatican, the United Nations, and now other nations have not signed it, but they have people, prominent people in these nations have endorsed them. So the president of the European Union made positive statements about the Noahide laws. So did, let's see who he was, an Australian senator said that the Noahide laws have wide and universal application. President Putin over in Russia was asked to teach the nation about the Noahide laws by the chief rabbi's father. So we see some kind of unofficial movements. They're trying to bring these into other nations, or at least they're trying to bring it, they're trying to do in other nations what they've done in the United States, which is to subvert the law. Another important group that has gotten involved in this from the very start and inception is Freemasonry. If you go to the Freemasonry section on my website, you will learn that in its earliest charters, the Freemasonry, it has since been removed, but in its earliest charters in the Grand Lodge of England, it said that the Freemasons are obligated, again, obligated to follow these Noahide laws, and that Noahide law is Freemasonry. There are many quotes about how Freemasonry is Noahidism, Noahidism is Freemasonry. So that's probably how this got signed into law in the United States in the first place, because we know the government is heavily populated by Freemasons. So that's probably how it got in there in the first place. So we can see that this is taking worldwide...
You also mentioned Jehovah's Witnesses under the title of Freemasonry. I think you could also add the Mormon Church.
Yes, I actually just did a video on that. See, I was raised Jehovah's Witness, and read Fritz Springmeier's Be Wise as Serpents. And
yes.
he has another one on the Watchtower and the Freemasons, or something like that. He has another book, Watchtower and the Freemasons, Fritz Springmeier. And he very thoroughly goes into detail about how the Jehovah's Witness religion and even Mormonism were founded on Freemasonry. And I had actually just done a video. I do a debate with a Jewish man named Duvid. And he basically said, yes, that the Jehovah's Witnesses and the Mormons work on a centralized committee system, and that the centralized committee systems work under a Noahide structure. And, you know, he said basically, which is true, is that the higher up you go in these Freemason organizations, as you go up in the governing bodies, you find more and more Jewish influence, which is true. So
everyday Freemason who's just doing a good job, and they really don't know what the top level are doing, correct?
Yes and no. I think that, unfortunately, what you will find, I've been finding with lots of different groups, is that they might not know about it, but when they find out about it, their reaction is not exactly maybe what you would want. We're going to talk about how people try to downplay this a lot, confuse you. I find that a lot of these organizations that are wrapped up in this, maybe they didn't know about it, but when they find out, they take a very defensive position, or they just don't want you talking about it. Some of them will call you an anti-Semite. So there is definitely those types of problems going on when you discuss this. So bring it to light to them and see what their response is. But I can tell you my experience has been that it is not
right.
A very positive response. So before we go forward, because there's lots of stuff to talk about, let's talk about this Chabad Lubavitch and Rabbi Schneerson that were heavily mentioned in public law in all those public laws. I didn't go into the proclamations. Go on my website. You will see that there are two more proclamations. I don't know how much authority they have. They were both signed in by Ronald Reagan. But basically, they made the same types of statements about the Noahide laws and praise of Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson. So this Chabad Lubavitch movement is a very powerful, it is perhaps, if you go on Wikipedia, they say it's one of the most powerful Jewish organizations in the world. It is one of the most widespread. It is one of the most radical Jewish organizations in the world, one of the most wealthy. And they are one of, they are not the only, but they are one of the central bodies that are promoting these Noahide laws everywhere. They were actually involved in getting them passed in the United Nations as well as in the United States. And Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson he died in 1994, the leader of the Lubavitch movement. And they actually, most of them believed that he was the Messiah. And I could see why they would believe that, because even our own government has stated that he is the leader of world Jewry. So the government has basically said that he is the Messiah. Now, his insert into the Noahide laws, this should be extremely offensive, because he is on record saying that non-Jews have satanic souls while Jews come from holiness. And he also basically laid out a doctrine where non-Jews were put on this earth to serve Jews, and that we are basically the property of Jews. Now, this is the type of man who's being lauded. He's the type of man, he is the father of the modern Noahide movement. Noahide law has been around since the Talmud, and there have always been movements to promote the Noahide laws, but he really was the greatest proponent of these Noahide laws in history. Nobody went above him. And this is the type of man that is pushing for these global Noahide laws that are mandatory, that call for the execution of Christians as idolaters, blasphemers, which are Christians.
But decapitation, is that symbolic or literal?
No, it's literal. It's literal. Some Jews will try to tell you it's symbolic, but that's rubbish. No, this is real. This is real decapitation. And even if it is symbolic, still our government should not be recognizing this. And, you know, decapitate, basically they would say that you're cut off from civilization.
Yes.
Uh-huh. So, I mean, it really doesn't matter anyway. But what's most important about making Rabbi Schneerson the leader of world Jewry is that he had the most stringent, strict interpretations of the Noahide laws. First of all, we're going to talk about this a lot. Lots of Jews will debate you, and they will say, well, Christianity is not really idolatry. Don't worry about this. We're going to talk about Shittuf. Rabbi Schneerson said, yes, Christianity is idolatry. So when it comes to how these Noahide laws are going to be applied, we know for certain that Christians are going to fall under the idolatrous rubric. However, a lot of times you're going to notice that Jews are always going to try to downplay this and gaslight you and tell you don't need to worry about this. Nothing's going to happen. This is not a problem. And what they bring up is they say that we can't do any Noahide executions on earth right now because there's no Sanhedrin in Israel. If you remember in the Bible, Jesus was brought before the great Sanhedrin to be tried. The Great Sanhedrin is the highest legal authority in the Jewish religion. Now, there is no Jewish Sanhedrin over in Israel right now because there is no Jewish temple. Israel is not a totally functioning Jewish theocracy, even though they do have a lot of Jewish laws, and we're going to get into the Israeli government's involvement in all of this. But what they'll come and they'll say, well, there's no highest Jewish court. The Sanhedrin is not in session. So this is all theoretical, and you don't need to worry about this until the Messianic age arrives, so stop worrying. Rabbi Schneerson said absolutely not. He said you don't need a Sanhedrin. He said you can do the executions now. And he actually said that if you can do it by force, and he used the word force first, and he said if you can't do it that way, do it through pleasantry and kindness, which is why we're seeing all of this, you know, education and charity and giving. These ideas are being put forward first because they can't force. But you know, as soon as they can, they will. And we're going to talk about how they can actually get close to that, because a lot of people say, well, there's not a lot of Jews on earth, so how could they do this? And they actually are very silently setting up their armies. How much time until the next break?
7 minutes.
Okay.
Well, actually 4 minutes.
Okay.
3 minutes. Yeah, 4 minutes.
Right. So that's very important. We can start getting into some implementation of it a little bit. So let's get into that question. Or wait. The one thing I want to bring about this education charity, if you go to the United Nations section of the website that I have, stopnoahidelaw.blogspot.com, the organization, which is the Chabad Lubavitch organization in the United Nations that got the United Nations to sign onto the mandatoriness of these Noahide laws, is noahide.org. It's called the Institute for Noahide Code. Go to their website. I have it listed there. They list decapitation as a requirement under these Noahide laws, right on the United Nations, not on the United Nations website, but they're officially associated with it. So they're not hiding this. But the founder, Rabbi Cohen, at the United Nations, someone asked him, well, how did you get these Noahide laws passed in the United States? Because we have the Establishment Clause and there's no... there must be separation of church and state. And he said that it was passed as education, that the Noahide law, see, they try to trick you and they say, well, Noahide law is not a religion. It's a moral system. Anything that tells you how to worship, what you can and cannot worship, is a religion. And it comes out of the religion of Judaism. But they come forward and it's not a religion. It's a moral system. And we're here to educate. So they got it into the United States through the policy of education and not religion. You will see there's a lot of disguises going on here, and we're going to talk more about these disguises. And that same rabbi, Rabbi Cohen, in the United Nations said that they want to put these Noahide laws into the constitutions of all the governments on earth. So he specifically stated that that is their agenda, and they are doing that. We can see...
Mm-hmm. I don't want to interrupt your flow of thought.
No, well, I'll just finish up on this United Nations that...
A question. Now, a lot of very, very well-educated people, if you were to suggest that the Jewish religion or the Jewish people were running things, they would just identify you immediately as an anti-Semite and think that you were crazy. And because we never hear anything about this, people outside of Congress aren't going to talk about it. The only person that didn't sign up, I think, probably, her name just went out of my head. She was running on the Green Party. But people will say, you're crazy. You're just absolutely crazy. How do you respond to that? Of course, you respond by developing your website.
The response is, how did they get all these laws passed? How did they get this in the United Nations? How did they get it into the Vatican in Freemasonry? And in other sections, we're going to be talking about the infiltration of Islam and Christianity as well, because they are making a lot of inroads. If they didn't have a lot of power, how on earth did they get these recognized? Quickly, I just want to say that Public Law 103-14 in 1993, which was signed, that I didn't get into too much detail, was signed by President Bill Clinton. So we had three presidents. We had Reagan, Bush, and Clinton over three administrations. All of them signed onto these Noahide laws seven times, two proclamations. How is this happening if Jews do not have a lot of power in the nation, in the United Nations, over the Vatican, in Freemasonry? How did they get these passed? Why is the European Union praising these laws? Why is Australian senators praising these laws? I mean, when they were brought before Putin and the chief rabbi's father asked him to teach these Noahide laws, why didn't he kind of get revolted by that? Why didn't, you know, what was his response? So I think that it's self-evident that there's at least a certain degree of power in the Jewish community in America and in the world if they're able to get this on paper.
Right. Amazing. It is amazing. it truly is. And you have the proof. And of course, we don't hear about it on the nightly news, of course. They don't announce these laws. People aren't aware of what, what Congress
right.
is doing.
Right. Why isn't this in the media? Why isn't this in the media? You told, I mean, Dan and Meyer knew about it. Dr. Lorraine's husband wrote mm-hmm. about it. And I mean, he knew about it. I want to talk about that in a minute.
Because he was in Congress.
Right.
He was in Congress, and that's why.
People have heard about this, and these are extremely inflammatory laws and inflammatory statements. I've had my website up for almost 7 years now. I did public demonstrations out. Not one journalist was interested in this. I did public demonstrations in the Port Authority and Grand Central Station in New York City. Huge 8-foot banners, Stop Noah Hyde Law, Repeal Public Law 102-14, Equal Rights for Non-Jews. I did it for a month. I did nothing. Nobody. It wasn't on the news. Nothing reported on it. The Jews didn't complain. They tried to have me removed, but they didn't publicize it. Like, oh, there's this anti-Semite in Grand Central Station trying. They were very quiet about it. They didn't want anything. I mean, if I had stood there with any kind of Nazi paraphernalia, it would have been all over the news. But, I mean, I stood there for a month, and nobody picked it up. No one picked it up. Why?
Wow. Well, Cynthia McKinney, she was in the Green Party. She was the only one that refused to sign on to support Israel, which is not different than what you're talking about. She just didn't sign on, and of course, they got rid of her immediately.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing.
Right.
Really,
right. Yeah. I think that
and
anyone that does
in New York. Wow.
Yes, yes, a huge, I was in New York City and just nothing. There's nothing, no, I have come across, there was one in foreign policy, he just said, well, why, he said, you're afraid of a Sharia, you should be afraid of Noah Hyde. You know, I did, that was the only, I think it was Foreign Policy Magazine, it was one of the few places I've ever read anyone who even took the most mild criticism in mainstream media against the Noah Hyde laws.
Wow. And of course, we have heard about Sharia law, but never anything about Noah Hyde.
No, wow. And we're going to see that actually it's not just the paper tiger. You know, people are always all on paper. This is all theoretical. No, it's not.
All righty, we are at the top of the hour, and we will be back momentarily.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.